Hello and welcome everyone to episode 55 of the Ducky O'Brien Show. And today I'll be covering more SBC gaming news. So this is the segment where I go through all the news items from the subreddits, the retro handheld subreddits, and then I cover news items that were interesting to me. There's a lot of stuff where it's just people asking, hey, which handheld's the best for me and all of that. And I skip over to all of that stuff and I pick out actual news items. So I'm recording this episode on March 29th, and I'll be talking about the new Miu handhelds announced. And these were mentioned a while back, but there was recently new information. So the A30 was first mentioned around March 14th, and then the rumored release dates, I'm putting that in air quotes, you can't see me, but they were mentioned sometime around March 21st. And by the time the episode comes out, it should be around May 13th. So I scheduled the podcast for every Monday at 12:30 p.m. And so if there's any new information between now and then the day that's released, I'm actually going to re-upload the episode and have updated information in it. You can't see that because behind the scenes it's all scheduled. But if there's any new information, I'll be sure to include that somehow. I'm going to be going over this in the episode, but I just wanted to start off here with it because I think this is a pretty big news item. And the rumored release dates came from Go Game Geek, which is a web store. And they're saying that the Miu Flip was expected to be stocked April 15th to the 21st. And then the Miu A30 was expected to release around April 15th to the 29th. And then there's apparently a new Miu Mini V3. I don't know if they mean the original V3 that they're re-releasing or the third iteration of the Miu Mini. I don't know what they're talking about here. That's expected to release April 15th to the 21st. And now this is very questionable because Miu themselves said the A30 will be releasing first because the Flip will be coming out later. And it wasn't just like, oh, come out a few days later. It sounded like if you read between the lines, it'll come out like at least a month later. I'm not sure where they're getting this information. It might not be true, but by the time this episode comes out, we'll know for a fact if it released or not. And if I can get my hands on one, then I'll definitely include information in this episode as well. Anyways, before we begin, I would like to thank everyone for dropping by and listening. I really do appreciate it. Thank you for giving me some of your time. If there's anything I can do for you guys, please feel free to let me know. You can email me at duckyobrienshow@gmail.com. That's DuckyObrienShow@gmail.com. Once again, the email is DuckyObrienShow@gmail.com. You can also head over to my blog if you want more information. That's DuckyObrien.com. And that should have links to everything I'm doing, my YouTube channel and all of that, and all my articles and guides. Anyways, why don't we get into the episode? Hey, what's up guys? It's been a while since I last recorded one of these, and let me explain real quick. I was working on a video for, you know, determining counterfeit micro SD cards and how to avoid buying counterfeit cards. And that video took a long time. It was like taking a week because I was doing, you know, as much research as I could. And then I was making these infographics. They don't look really pretty, but like I put a lot of effort into it. And I was getting close to finishing the video after a week of working. And then I was staying up late. It was like 3 a.m. And then I was tired. And I was creating a lot of files. You know, I was copying files. I was transferring files to show like the speeds of the micro SD cards for like a few seconds in the video. And after creating the files, I deleted them, right? But then I mistakenly dragged my directory, which had my images in it, my infographics. And then I emptied the recycling bin in like less than a second. And then as I was working on my video, all my images just disappeared. And I was like, oh no, did I just delete them? And I went into a panic. I downloaded, you know, as many picture recovery tools as I could. And only one of them saw the images, but they couldn't recover it. So I had to do it all over again. So that's why it took nearly 2 weeks to make that stupid video. It's out now. It's by the grace of God that I got it done. But yeah. So now we're back to a more normal schedule. And I can make videos as I normally do. But yeah, some of them take a lot of time. It doesn't feel like they take a lot of time to make, but like behind the scenes, it takes a lot of work to make a guide sometimes because I have to find out the information first and then verify it. And then whenever I have to make, you know, infographics, it takes a lot of time and effort to make just one frame. I'm not good at it, but yeah, I try my best. Anyways, we got more news today. Today we're going to be focusing on the new Miu consoles. There were a lot of announcements, and a lot of these news items are going to be a little bit outdated because, you know, if you look at the first post, it's from 2 weeks ago, but why don't we get into it? All right, to start off with, we'll cover this post from Gabby90 in the RG35XX subreddit. They made new menu sounds, and I think this is pretty funny. Okay, I think that's pretty hilarious. We're going to go into new consoles now. As always, everything will be timestamped below. All my sources will be linked in both the description and the comments. Anyways, this is from The Fox, and he covered the MSI Claw. I like this review because he goes really into the details, the nitty-gritty of the console. And essentially, the gist of it is that it performs way worse at the same TDPs compared to the other handhelds because of the Intel processor and the chipset. It's just not as refined as AMD. So while theoretically it might be able to perform, it just doesn't have the drivers or the firmware, whatever it needs to operate as efficiently as AMD. It's just not there. So that's why he looks really disappointed. I would highly recommend checking out this review. This was the best review I saw for the MSI Claw. Retro Game Core has like a preview video out, and there were some other people, but you know, there's some other channels I just don't know, but out of the channels that I saw, this guy did the best job reviewing it. So if you're interested, I would check out the review before spending any money. In my opinion, from what I saw, it's just better to buy a Steam Deck, ROG Ally, or Legion Go at this point, or any of the other, you know, consoles. All right, now we have the announcement of the R50S from Norcus, and this is a horizontal R36S. The button placements are okay, I guess. I really don't like it when they have the music there, but it's a little questionable because the analog sticks are on top, both of them, and I'm like, that is the worst possible combination that you can have. It's the least ergonomic to me. Some people might prefer it, but like if you're playing like a FPS, then you're going to be using the dual analog sticks and the trigger buttons. But for the consoles that you can emulate on that chipset, it's going to be mostly 4x3, and you're going to be using the D-pad and the face buttons. So that layout doesn't make sense to me. I have a M17 here. I'm still reviewing this, but the joystick on top, doesn't make sense because I use a D-pad more often and this layout looks the same, right? It looks comfortable, but here's the thing. When you're grabbing it, your hand is positioned like this and it creates a lot of strain on the thumb here, like this, I don't know, tendon, ligament, muscle, whatever it is. It's very uncomfortable to play for a very long time. Okay, Editor Ducky here. It's hard to imagine what I'm describing without looking at the video itself, but I'll try my best here. So for the M17, the thumbstick is on the top on the left side and the D-pad is on the bottom. On the right-hand side, the face buttons are on top and there's a second analog stick on the bottom. So when you're holding the device, your left hand will be positioned a little bit lower than your right hand. And as you're playing games, it's kind of awkward to grip it because for your thumb to be positioned comfortably, you're essentially holding it very similarly to the Miu Mini Plus. In fact, the grip is more uncomfortable than the Miu Mini Plus because you have to position your hand in such a way where your pointer finger and your middle finger, the fingertips are essentially going to be holding the M17 so that you can position your thumb comfortably. There's like no space for the console to rest on your palm. You can kind of sort of shift your grip to point upwards. But yeah, no matter what you do, it causes huge strain on your thumb and you'll feel it in your thumb, in the meat of your palm, whatever that is, the muscle, ligament, tendon, whatever that is, it's going to feel extremely strained after about 30 minutes of playing the console. So when I look at the R50S, it's going to be not ideal in that both thumbsticks are on top, so when you want to use the face buttons and the D-pad, you're going to have to grip the device in such a way where you're going to fingertip it, and there's going to be a lot of space between your palm and the device. In fact, it's going to be more uncomfortable than the Mu Mini Plus, because the Mu Mini Plus, while you're fingertipping it, there's like enough balance because it's symmetrical and the distribution of the weight is more even, so you can play it. Now, if you have larger hands, it may still cramp up, but it's going to be more comfortable than that layout. Because even though it's horizontal, you got to look at the space between the buttons and the edge of the device, because that gives you an idea of how much you're going to be able to palm it. And when I look at it, yeah, there's no space. There's no space there, so it's going to be really uncomfortable for long play sessions, more than the Miu Mini Plus. So yeah, I thought that was kind of odd. Definitely not ergonomic. Anyways, back to the episode. You got to have it a little bit more comfortable. So yeah, so that is a little bit questionable, because I'm not sure why it's better than the R36S. But new consoles, you know, it's great. Someone out there will like this, and that's the great part. It doesn't have to appeal to me, as long as someone out there likes it. But yeah, I like the comment here from Mesner, Game Console-y back at it again. Because when you look at the back of the R36S, it says Game Console-y with an I, not an L. The newer version should say Game Console, but the price is supposed to be $70 on AliExpress, and I think that's a little bit expensive. This post is from GFKEYUKTF. I don't know what that's supposed to be, but yeah, if you look here, it's from the Volume Direct store. And yeah, I don't know, man. At this point, I would just recommend buying an R36S. Also, just keep in mind, if you're buying on AliExpress, you do have to do some legwork to make sure you protect yourself. I can go over that in a later video. Yeah, I don't know, man. Also, they charge tax. If your state charges sales tax, you're going to get charged tax on AliExpress. I'm pretty sure they're not paying it to the US, but they charge it anyways. Alright, so this is a post from Wao Su Hu Tao, a Miu Flip Wen Miu. The reason why I linked this post is, this is the first time I saw this. This is from Clerk Psychological 58. There's a Discord leak from a while back for the 35XS SP from AmberNick. And if you take a look at the picture here, I think it's from, yeah, Lao Zhou. I don't know who this guy is, but I see him pop up in a lot of like insider info posts. And yeah, it looks like a Game Boy SP without analog sticks. So people were complaining about the Miu Mini Flip design, that it had analog sticks. I personally don't care too much, as long as they don't get in the way. For these older systems, I primarily use D-pad, but you know, some people like analog sticks, so having both is not an issue to me. But yeah, that's another apparent flip model coming out. We're not sure. There's, you know, I don't know. It could be all rumor, speculations. Nothing could come out. You know, like all the Sugar Cube consoles, I haven't seen a single one being reviewed. So I don't know if they ever came out with those. We have another flip console here. This is from Ganymoth. This is the SC-Deer D008. And this is the patent renders of the clamshell. Now, there's some concerns here. For starters, that looks very uncomfortable. Like, it looks like you're going to be holding a square, like the old NES controllers. Those things aren't very ergonomic, so that's I don't know about that. But the thing here is, if that's the speaker grill, I don't like rear-firing speakers. To me, they're the worst. I have the Theta Frog here, and this has a mono rear-firing speaker. This one is just fake. I don't know why they have this here. The problem with rear-firing speakers is that it has to be louder than front-firing speakers. So if you don't have a headphone port and you're playing in public, it's going to bother other people. It's going to be noticeably loud. It's going to be louder to them than to you, probably. And secondly, the quality is not really good. For a mono front-firing speaker like the Miu Mini Plus, this is questionable to begin with in terms of audio fidelity. It's serviceable. It reminds me of the old Game Boy Color. But for newer generation games, the audio is significantly better, you know, so the speakers don't do it justice. I don't mind it, you know, playing it like that, but rear firing speaker, it will definitely sound muddy. So I'm not sure about that. As long as they have a headphone port, which they seem to, it's okay, but not ideal. Okay, so we're getting into the Miu stuff now. This is from UpbeatServe6096. It's a tentative video of the Miu Mini Flip. If you take a look at this screen here, we see that the menu is the same as the official UI on the Miu Mini Plus and the Miu Mini. So people were speculating that Onion OS might be compatible with this device. I'm not entirely sure because the chipset's going to be different, so we'll see. A lot of speculation. We'll see if it ever comes out. The real question is going to be about the hinges, because the hinges always break. It's the only thing I'm worried about, because if you look at the Retroid Pocket Flip, the hinges busted on those. Chances are the hinges might give way on these devices, but we'll see. Now here we have the A30, and I'm actually excited about this console. So it's supposed to be like a Game Boy Micro. It reminds me of that. As you know, I read through the subreddits every day. No new information out. It might be on Discord or Twitter, and I don't have those two platforms, so Reddit is the only thing I can read. I don't have a Reddit account. I just read Reddit. But yeah, it looks kind of neat. Also, they said that the Flip will not come out and the A30 will release first. And this is from apparently the official Miu Twitter. The thing that was weird was I read through all the comments too, and someone said that they measured it and there was a 3:2 aspect ratio. And I don't understand where they got that, because I measured it in GIMP and it was not a 3:2 aspect ratio. It was a 4:3 aspect ratio. So I don't know. Maybe I did it wrong. Maybe they did it wrong. I think people were speculating that it's going to be the same screens as the Miu Mini V4. And that would make the most sense to me. But if it's a 3:2 aspect ratio, that'd be amazing. Because what I want is kind of like a Game Boy Micro-esque console where I can play games. Just put it in my pocket, pull it out, play for a few minutes or whatever, put it back in my pocket, and have it stay safe. The Miu Mini Plus I like. It's very fragile. The screen can get busted easily. That looks way more durable because there's a little bit of the handheld is kind of blocking the screen out from being damaged unless it falls straight on its face. The only thing is, I don't really care about the analog stick. I don't really need that there, but when you have it, it is kind of handy. If they didn't have that, I think it'd be better because you can rest your thumb underneath the D-pad a little bit easier and it'd be easier to kind of control that device. It looks really tiny. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to use the analog stick comfortably. That looks cool. I'm actually hyped about this more than the Miu Mini Flip, to be honest. I hope it's affordable, and we'll see about that, though. So here is something... Oh, sorry, I forgot to give credit. This was posted by OneZone YouTube, and this was sourced from Bilibili. Okay, this is a post from CV990 on the SBC Gaming subreddit. And this is supposedly from the GoGamerGeek Twitter. This I'm a little skeptical about, and I'll tell you why. So they're saying that they're going to release the Miu Mini V3, not the V4, the V3. I actually don't know what that means. A new version of the Miu Mini, or are they re-releasing the V3 version? Expect the stock day is April 15th to the 21st. Miu Mini Flip from April 15th to the 21st, and A30 from April 15th to April 29th. I'm calling cap on this because this is from a reseller. I think they're a reseller. The official Twitter account said that the Flip will release later, and so they will release the A30 first. So how is it that this reseller is saying that the Flip and the A30 will come out at the same time? That doesn't make sense to me. It sounds like the A30 is going to release first, and then the Flip will release like, I don't know, a month to 2 months later. That's what it sounds like. I would wait to see what happens. Another thing is I would not be an early adopter. I know, you know, it's a shiny new gadget. The consumer inside of you wants to go on and buy the flashy new thing. I would highly recommend waiting for the Flip. For the consumer, you know, I think it's best to wait because the earliest batches always have issues. If you look at the Retro Pocket 4, the shoulder buttons, the triggers had very weak springs. And so the early batches, most of them broke, and then Retroid had to ship out new backplates with springs on them, better springs on it. So I don't think there's any reason ever to buy something first. You know, you're not missing out. If you have a handheld, you can still play the games. The first batches are always the worst. I don't know why someone would want the worst of something. But yeah, if you're a consumer, especially if you're on a budget, don't buy the hype. I would wait and see, and then see if it's worth buying. And if it isn't, go on to the next device. If you have a limited budget, make sure that the device you buy is going to last. But yeah, I would take this with a grain of salt, because the official manufacturer said the 830 is going to release first and the flip later. We'll wait and see what happens. All right, we have buyer advice now. This is something neat, I think. Retro Game Core released a video on the Amazon Fire TV Stick. I think this is very handy in that it's like a $40 device and you can play games on it. He goes over the setup and everything. Overall performance is kind of low, but you can play PSP, Dreamcast, and N64, and I think native resolution. So it's going to look a little blurry on your TV. But yeah, if you are on a budget and you wanted to have like a little device that'll play games on a TV, this is absolutely an option. As long as you're okay with it not looking the cleanest. But yeah, he goes over how to set it up and everything. If you're interested, you can check that out. I found my old Chromecast, so I'm going to see if I can rig something up with that. I don't think the device itself can play games, but maybe I can just use it to cast something from my PC. Anyways, I'm going to dig into that and I'll get back to you guys if I find anything worthwhile. Alright, for our next news, we have introducing Steam Families. This was posted by JVal247, and this is an official release from Steam. I think this is a overall win. There's one caveat that I'm going to go over real quick. So according to this user here, Velocity37, you have to be in the same region as all the family members to use their libraries. How it works is, it's not your actual region, it's your Steam Marketplace region. So you can set that separately. I think you can change it once a year or something. Whatever your Steam Marketplace region is set to, everyone has to be in the same region to share the games in this new family member method thingamabob. It might be a nerf, but overall I think it's okay in that how it used to work is that if you're sharing your library with someone else who's in a different region, if the games cost more in that region, they can access your library. But if they cost less, they can't. That's how they restricted it based on the overall price. Most of the time, if you're living in a different region as someone else and they share a library, you couldn't access some of the games anyways. This is still a nerf though, but I'm going to go over what's different. I think this is huge. For starters, you just send an invite and then you join the family. Before, what you have to do is you have to give them your login info. So they have to log into your Steam account and then add themselves as someone who's sharing your library and then log out. So it required a lot of trust. And this way is a lot easier. You just simply send an invite and then you get added. The downside is if you leave a family, it'll take you 1 year before you can join another one. So be very careful which family you join. The actual really good benefit is that before, if anyone used that entire library, no one else could access it. So if I was playing a game on my library and I shared it with someone else, it doesn't matter what I was playing. They can't touch any of my games unless they started playing a game on my library first and then signed off to go into offline mode. It was a single player game. Yeah, like if they're just logged in, they can't access it. And I thought that was really stupid because if you're using it as sort of like a real life analogy, if I have a library of games and I give you one, you know, and I'm playing a game from my library, it doesn't make sense that I'm not going to let you play anything else. Games are an individual entity. It's not this giant single entity that exists together as amorphous cloud. So it didn't make sense to me. So this model makes more sense in that anyone can borrow any game from anyone's library as long as no one else is playing it. So if I had a copy of Portal 2 and someone wanted to play it and they're in my family, they can. Now, if someone else wanted to play that copy, they can't. So it's only one person per copy, which makes sense for physical games. Digital, not so much, but I get what they're trying to do here. The thing is, though, Let's say another person in the family has another copy of Portal 2. That means up to two people can play those games. This is way better. I think, in my opinion, it's way easier to use. You don't have to give anyone your login info, and anyone can play any game as long as only one person is playing that game. The downside being it's locked to the same region. Again, not where you're actually living, but where you set your Steam Marketplace to. The reason why your Steam Marketplace region might be a little bit different is that you moved countries and you want to keep it in the same region as you were before. Or there's a trick where you set your region to a region with lower prices and then you fund that through a credit card or just gifting it and then you buy games for cheaper. I don't know if that's against terms of service, but I know some people who do that. I think that's neat. So if you want to read about it, you can read it on this official Steam post. You can go look up any of the Reddit posts and see what people are saying. But yeah, I think overall it's a win. All right, here's something that I thought was cool. I really want to do this. This is from Take Udon. And this is a OLED Game Boy Color screen, and it looks amazing. It has a touchscreen input where you can access the extra features. It just looks really clean, and I saw a few other people doing tests, and the battery life seems to be okay. Yeah, but it just looks really nice. The other cool thing is this part here, that's part of the screen. Editor Ducky here. If you look at the mod, there's a screen, and underneath the screen is a little section that says Game Boy Color. That's actually part of the screen, and you can change the color or turn it off. I think it's really neat. So the screen actually goes down, since I think it's using integer scaling or something, so a lot of the screen isn't used. It's going to be covered up with a bezel. And here is part of the screen. You can change that color, or you can turn it off completely because it's OLED. So I'm like, that's awesome. I really want one of these. I wish I had the money. I would love to buy old Game Boy Color, do a shell swap, and then get that OLED screen, and it looks super nice. It's about $55 on AliExpress. With tax, it's going to be a little bit more, so you're going to end up paying $60 for a screen. In my opinion, if you really like Game Boy Color, I think it's worth it. It's better than buying an analog pocket. Okay, here we have some fixes. This is from Illustrator Gloomy 657. It's for the ROG Ally if you have some noise in your speakers. I think it's really ingenious how people just keep trying to find a solution for a problem they have instead of just being like, oh, you know, shrugging their shoulders and be like, I guess that's how it is. Apparently what they did was they disassembled their system and then they put Cheerio over the back of the speaker. They just kept on tape here. And their theory was that the vibration of the speakers would build up static electricity, which would cause the noise in the speakers. And this fixed it for them. So yeah, if you have an ROG Ally and the speakers are bothering you, this may be a potential fix. And this is a related post as well from Madao893. They're asking about their OLED 3.5mm port being noisy on their IEMs. Apparently the fix is there's one screw where you have to add a little bit of electrical tape around that screw. I don't know why that fixes it. Again, it might be static electricity. I don't know how it's going to short something, but yeah, that's crazy. But this goes to show that a lot of these consoles, even the high-end ones from established manufacturers, all have problems. I read through all the subreddits, and for all of them, Legion Go, ROG Ally, even Steam Deck, a lot of people are having a lot of problems. Some of it is they just don't know how to use Google, but even if they did, the devices shouldn't be having these problems to begin with, like a noisy audio port, audio jack. That should be on the manufacturer to make sure that there's no interference with that audio signal, not up to me to put a little bit of tape on the screw. Like, none of these devices are perfect. There's a lot of software issues too, where you update the BIOS and drivers and then it messes up your settings and games run slowly, so you have to disable some stuff. I'm like, yeah, we're not quite there yet where you just get the device and it always works. We're not quite at the console level yet. I'm talking about older consoles because newer consoles still have issues. It used to be that you just put in your game and it works. If the game doesn't work, you're screwed. I prefer the option of tinkering. I prefer being able to fix my device, modify it, however I want. I'd rather have that than a locked ecosystem where I can't do that. That's always a lie, in that that kind of locked ecosystem will provide more stability. It doesn't. It really doesn't. If you take a look at Apple, if you are knowledgeable about repair and hardware, you know that Apple is garbage. Okay, I'm going to outright say it. It's garbage, right? Their locked ecosystem, their walled garden, it's not perfect. If you don't believe me, you can go check out Louis Rossman, right? This guy fixes Apple devices for a living. And he's always angry, though. That might be it. That might be why, because he has to deal with all these companies. All right, now moving on to user creations. This is from 10 Levels. I thought this was really amazing. It looks very nice. These are custom dye jobs on the translucent purple shell. And I really like how this green one turned out. I think it looks fantastic. They share how to do it. Basically, you buy a brand new shell because used ones will cause blotchy dye jobs. And then you have to add in the dye. There's a certain ratio to mix with water, add a little bit of acetone. And you keep that mixture at a certain temperature. And they said to do it outdoors because it's very smelly and you want to wear gloves. And let me tell you, if you're going to do it outdoors and you're wondering how to do it, you use this. A portable butane stove. If you know, you know. So I used to use a lot of these for a Korean barbecue. This is very handy if you go camping, you want to cook something, make ramen, make some rice, make anything. You can make stew on that, coffee, anything. This will let you kind of heat up that mixture to a certain degree. You probably want a thermometer to make sure it's stable. I thought that was really cool because people are just creating what they want if the option is not available. And that is one facet that's always fascinating to me for these retro handhelds. Instead of like waiting for someone to make something, they're making it themselves. And I see a lot of people doing that. Software, hardware, whatever it is. 3D printers allowed people to make what they want. They can visualize a design and then have it physically made without the skills to make like a model, then mold that model and then cast it and everything. I think it's great. This is from AG Neinstein. They had an Ionea Air Pro and they fixed the thermal throttling by adding copper everywhere. And I don't think this is a good design, in that if your handheld needs this much extra copper for it to function, I think you're doing something wrong there. I'm not talking about the user. They did a great job. I'm talking about Ionea. And one reoccurring thing that I read about Ionea is that there are people with devices that work fine. That's perfectly fine. But then there are a lot of people where their devices don't work. And one of the main problems is overheating. I think there's a design flaw where their thermals are not designed very well. It's a little bit sad because like their devices look nice and they cost a lot. So people pay a lot of money for their devices and it ends up not working. And the customer support is most of the time atrocious. Yeah, like out of all the devices, these are kind of the hardest to repair. It's not as simple as taking apart a few screws and everything. And yeah, look, you gotta add so much copper. So if you're thinking of buying Ionea, I would say, you know, be very careful because you have to consider the possibility that you spend a lot of money and get a potato. Okay, this is from Mugwomp93. They have the perfect GBA overlays centered. So the overlays are usually made by one player insert coin. They have a lot of good overlays. I saw some people using like the CRT effect to bend the picture around the corners. I guess like if you grew up with that and you want that, that's more power to you. But for me, I'm fine without any overlays. Like the image looks fine. I don't need it to be pixelated for me to enjoy the game. Like I'm not enjoying the game because of the way it looks in terms of how the pixels are looking. I'm enjoying the game because the game is fun. For me, I know this might be sacrilegious to say, but on the M17 stock SD card and operating system, the Game Boy Advance games are stretched to full screen on a 16:9 screen. I think it looks okay. It doesn't look perfect, but I'm like, this is playable. I prefer to keep the aspect ratio at least intact. It doesn't have to be integer scaling, but you know, I play the game, I'm like, wow, the game is fun. I'm using a stock SD card on all of these devices. I'm testing out the stock cards to see how long they last. I'm going to run H2TestW to check for capacity and see how easily it corrupts. And then I'm going to use Crystal Mark on all of them to see their speeds. The stock DataFrog SD card speeds were actually pretty decent. It was more than class 10. I think it was like 90 megabyte per second read speed and then 20 megabyte per second write, which is nice. The only problem is when you look at like official legitimate SD cards, the speeds are more stable. So like it's just a kind of overall a straight line. For these stock cards, it's like going up and down like this. And I'm like, oh, that's never a good sign. I'm just copying over large files as a batch. So it's not anything difficult. These cards seem to struggle with that a little bit more. So I'm worried about the microcontroller on the cards and then the quality of the flash memory itself. So I'm just trying to determine what is causing it to fail. Is it the memory chips itself or is it the microcontroller? That said, I just want to get an idea of when can I expect failure and what causes the failure and what you can expect out of using a stock card. I know they will fail. It's just a matter of time. But for a lot of people, it's just not in their budget to be able to buy a new card because they might be living in a place where they don't have access to a reliable SD card and this is the best they can do. And in that scenario, I want to see if I can kind of work around the fact that your SD card is going to fail inevitably. Other than syncing your save files, I don't know what else you can do in terms of preventing losing data. You know, you're going to have to reflash your card or recopy files. That's going to be it. That was kind of long and rambly. It's been a while since I made one of these. It feels like forever. But yeah, I already have my next queue news items getting ready. I'm going to have to get that sorted. But yeah, oh man, never again. I don't want to work on a video that took a week long and I have to do the same thing again ever again. I wanted to quit, but I'm getting into the rhythm of just pushing the video out and hopefully, I hope it helps people. I hope people find the information useful. When I was watching it back, I was like, oh, I can improve the flow of the information to the person watching. I can make it more logically consistent. Okay, that's going to be it. Now we're back to a more normal schedule. I have some smaller, thankfully less work-intensive videos coming out soon. Hopefully those are also equally helpful. Okay, that has been episode 55 of the Ducky O'Brien Show. Thank you so much for dropping by and listening. I really do appreciate it. Believe it or not, I really don't have social media. The only thing I use is Steam. Yes, I got rid of my Discord. And I don't have a Reddit account. I just read Reddit. And I don't have Facebook. I don't have none of that. I use Steam chat primarily. That's a little bit difficult for me to communicate or get news sometimes. But yeah, if you want to reach out to me, the best way would be to email me at duckyobrienshow@gmail.com. Or you can leave a comment on my blog at duckyobrien.com or on my YouTube channel and I'll see it. I do read every comment. And I'll try to respond as fast as possible if it's a comment that elicits a response. Anyways, that's going to be it. Once again, thank you guys so much. I see y'all listening. I hope it's humans, not robots. But yeah, thank you for listening to my show. I really appreciate it. And as always, hope you guys are staying safe and seeing out there. And catch you guys next time.